Welcome to the Shemar Al Guraya Parshas Kiseitzei. Wanted to focus tonight on two comments that the Maral has on two Rashis respectively in the Parsha of Malchus. In the beginning of Perek Chof Hei, the Torah tells us about someone who violates the prohibition for which the Beis Din administers lashes, Malchus. And the Pasuk says that in Perek Chof Hei Pasuk Beis, V'hoya im bin hakos ha-rasha, if the person who has been declared guilty, in other words, he's violated a type of sin which, you know, mandates that he be subject to the penalty of lashes, so the judge should make that person lie down and then strike him before him, kedeirish also b'mispar, a number of lashes which reflects the evil which that person has perpetrated. Right? He should hit him in the front. He should hit him in front of him. Kedeirish also, a number that reflects the degree of evil that that person has perpetrated. So on the words lefanov kedeirish also. Right, so the word lefanov, in front of him, first of all, is a very funny word to begin with in this context. Pilo hashofet, let the judge make the guy lie down. Fikol, and hit him. What's lefanov, in front of him? Hit him in front of him, as opposed to what? As opposed to the judge should walk out of the room.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but that's the judge doesn't see what's happening.
Well,
maybe it's saying the judge has to observe.
Well,
maybe not participate, but he has to be there and see what's happening.
Right, so it's actually interesting. In other words, it's not a halachic requirement that the judge be the person administering the malchus, but the truth is, from the pasuk, you would think that he would be vihi kahu, and he shall hit him. It doesn't actually say he shall, you know, he should mandate that lashes be given to him. It literally says he should hit him. So if it literally means he should hit him, it's hard to hit somebody who's not in your presence, right, with a whip. I mean, it's hard to sort of conjure up that case. So lefanov kedeirish also, Rashi understands as follows. Again, quoting from Chazal, ula acharov kedeishtayim. Lefanov, in front of him, means not the way we would think reading the pasuk, that the person who's receiving the lashes is lashed in the presence of the judge. In the front of him doesn't mean in the presence of. But in this context, in front of means that the lashes are administered to the front, to the chest of the person himself. So he's hit in the front, and then Rashi adds, ula acharav, and then on the person's back, kedei shtayim. He gets a double portion. In other words, what the pasuk is saying, again, we would not have thought this without Rashi necessarily, but lefanov kedei rishaso, there's a certain measure which is administered to the person on his chest, and then by implication, and then a double measure of whatever that is administered to the person's back. Mikan omruk, says Rashi, from here the rabbis derived that malkin oso shnei yados mila acharov, that whatever number is administered to the front of the fellow, shtei yados, a double portion, is administered to his back, ushlish milafanov, and a third of that is administered to his front. So in other words, the way it comes out, halacha lemaisa, again, as we know, there are 39 lashes, thank you, in total, which are administered to the person. That's going to be the next Rashi we're going to talk about. There are 39 lashes which are administered to the person. They're divided up into three sections of 13. 13 are administered to the front of the person. 26 are administered to the back of the person. We learn all of that out from lefanov kedeirish also, from those three words in the pasuk. What's the significance of that? You know, why hit him, you know, one third of the time in the front and two thirds of the time in the back? I don't know. The simplest thing I would think is that it hurts a lot more in the front, I think. I've never really been a recipient of Malchus, but I would imagine it hurts a lot more in the front than it does in the back. So in a certain sense, the Torah has rachmanis on the guy, you know, that, okay, we'll hit him in the back. But if that's all it is, it's just rachmanis, so hit him all 39 in the back. In other words, what's this idea of Davka doing a third of it in the front and two-thirds of it in the back? What's the significance of that? So here comes in the Maral, And the Maharal writes as follows: B'mnei shechashivus ha'adam milofanov u'b'chisuso me'acharov. The, so to speak, chashiv part of a person, the more distinguished, the more refined part of a person is in his front, and the less distinguished, the more mundane part of a person is in his back. What does that mean? So again, the Maharal doesn't spell it out, but presumably what it means is as follows: the person's face, which, you know, represents that which makes him distinguished and unique, right? You know, is on his front side. When you talk about, even in English, the backside of a person, you know, we refer to the place where a person excretes things. You know, it's not, you know, if you were taking a picture for passport purposes, you would prefer to show them the face rather than the back, right? So, unless the chosh of a part of a person is in the front, not in the back. It's for that reason, says the Maharal, that the two-thirds of the malchus are administered to the person's back. The back represents the more base part of the person, the more mundane part of the person, the part of the person which is more tied to this world. That part of the person needs muster, needs to be admonished and punished in some way to a greater extent than the dignified part of him requires malchus. Shua choshuv. So for that reason, you know, it's his base instincts which need to be given a zets over here, so they need a double portion on the back as opposed to the front. That's the first explanation, says the Maharal. Va'od ki aponim mipnei shehu yoser chashuv hu yoser me'at be'odam shekein timso la'olam shehachashuv hu me'at means she'eino choshuv shehu harov. Maral says a very interesting idea over here. He says things that are precious and things that are very choshuv tend to be found much more rarely than things that have less chashivus, things that have less importance. The truth is, from an economic point of view, this is simply what we call supply and demand, right? In other words, the more of something that you have, by definition, the less valuable it is. But the Maharal is saying, not just in an economic sense, but in a spiritual sense. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world in that way. Things that are very precious are hard to find. Things that are the majority of what's out there, you know, is by definition less choshev. V'lochein gam ken yeh nilka oso shehu me'at hamiyut v'apochos shehu harov yeh nilka harov. The dovers that borrow. It therefore stands to reason as follows. Says the Maharal, there's more of a person on the backside than there is on the front side. That's interesting. I mean, we think the shoulder length is the same, you know, across, you know, in either sense, right? So I guess he's saying that to some extent the person seems to be wider in the back. You know, you look at just the torso, the chest area of the person. It seems to be a little bit more narrow than, you know, the broad back that the person has in the back. You know, maybe that's what he means over here. But he says in that sense, you know, the less important part, which is in the back, you know, deserves to get more malchus. In other words, you know, the focus of less chashuv, the connection between that which is less chashuv and majority, means that the majority of the blows should fall out on the back, which is the less chashuv a part of the person, rather than the front of the person. Vein lomar de lefar of achas v'acharav shalosh de tofasta mua tofasta tofasta murbelo tofasta. Finally, the Maharal ends just with a technical point. You know, once we're saying that there's one portion which is given in the front, but more than one portion given in the back, so why don't we say as follows: give one portion in the front and three portions in the back, right? As opposed to making it 13, 13, 13, you know, maybe make it an even 40 and 10 in the front and 30 in the back. You know, maybe that would be the case. Right? How do you know that it's a 1-to-2 proportion? Maybe it's a 1-to-3 proportion, a 1-to-4 proportion, a 1-to-5 proportion. Says the Maral, we have a principle, tofasta meruba lo tofasta, which means, you know, always, you know, be conservative in terms of understanding what the Torah is trying to tell us. The Torah tells us that an extra portion is given in the back as opposed to the front, so you can only assume one extra portion. You can't assume, you know, beyond that, more than one extra portion. This idea that the Maral is bringing out over here, namely that the front of the person represents his dignity, his chashivus, the part of him which is, you know, elevated, and as such, and, you know, the back needs mussar, you know, more than the front, I think it's going to tie into the idea which we're going to see in just a moment in the Maral, where the Maral talks about the fact how the sin itself derives from both the guf, you know, the physical part of the individual, the body, as well as the neshama, the spiritual part of the person. And both the body and the soul need mussar to some extent as they're being punished for whatever the sin was that was committed. So I think a little bit of that idea that the person has to be punished both front and back, in other words, in a certain sense, both neshama and guf, both the dignified part of the person plus the more base and coarse and mundane part of the person, you know, this idea that the Maral is bringing out is that really, you know, each of us is composed of at least two distinct elements, you know, an element that's looking to do what's dignified, an element that's looking to just satisfy our pleasures and our urges, and both parts of the person have sinned in this regard, and they both need some kind of admonishment or punishment, but the base part of the person needs a greater admonishment, you know, than the more dignified and more elevated part of the person. So again, the Maral, you know, understands this concept of dividing up the Malkus into, you know, three different sets of 13. You know, set of 13 and set of 26. He understands that it's not just being some kind of technical thing, you know, but something that really reflects part of the hashkafa of what's going on with the Malkus. Okay, that's point number one, which the Maral brings out, which we're going to speak about tonight. We'll then see another Rashi, where Rashi also introduces a very, very well-known idea. And we'll see the comments of the Maral on it. Also very, very fascinating. So, in that same Pasuk, Perek Chofei, Pasuk Beis, the Pasuk had said, V'pilo ha-shofet v'kol lefonov, the judge, the Bezdin, should make the person lie down on the floor, strike him, hit him in front of him, which now we understand, according to Rashi, means hit him on the front side, kidei rish'aso, a measure which reflects his evil, bimispar, in a number. Again, which is translating that literally, the explanation is a little bit hard to come by. Kedevish also bimispar. You know, I think on a basic level we would probably say, you know, he hits them a number of malchus. You know, he gives them a number of lashes that reflects the evil that he's done. Right, but again, the way the phrase is put forward is a little bit odd. So Rashi writes as follows: the eino nakud ba mispar. Right, if you were to have a patach under the base ba mispar, it would indicate the definite article kederish also ba mispar in the number that reflects the evil that he's done. However, it doesn't say that. It doesn't have a patoch under the base. There's a shva under the base. Bimispar. Lamed shehu davuk. That teaches us, says Rashi, that the word bimispar, in a number of, is actually a possessive and is connected to the word that follows it. What's the word that follows it? The word bimispar is the end of the pasuk, right? There. You go off the end of the cliff after they get to that word. So, the next pasuk, of course, Pasuk Gimel says, "Arbo'im yakenu lo Yosef." He should strike the guy 40 lashes. He should not add on to 40. Okay, so you read the pasuk. The pasuk says 40. Says Rashi, no. Because it says bimispar with a shva lamechu davuk. It tells us that it's connected to the following word, So lomar bimispar arboim. The way to read the plukim is hit him bimispar arboim with a number that's 40-ish. Right? Now give him a number of malchus that is bimispar arboim, that approximates 40. Give him approximately 40 malchus. Velo arboim shleimim. But don't give him 40, you know, exactly 40 malchus. Elominyon shehu sochem umashlim la'arboim. Rather, says Rashi, give the guy malchus a number of malchus that is sochem. Sochem is a very funny word to translate. Sochem is related to the word schum, which means a total or an amount. Give him an amount which totals 40. Umashlim le'arba'im. Give him a number of malchus that completes 40. Vehein arba'im choser achas. Which means that you should actually give him 40 minus 1, i.e. 39. So, you know, the bottom line of what Rashi is telling us, and again, it's the Gemara, ultimately, and Machlis, which is telling us this. The bottom line, which Rashi is telling us, is when the Torah means 40, it really means 39. Take off one for savings. Right? 40 doesn't mean 40, it really means 39. But, you know, the exact terminology in Rashi, you know, when he's trying to explain that 40 doesn't mean 40, 40 really means 39, it's a little bit difficult to penetrate, to really understand what he's saying. Give the guy a minyan shu sochem umashlim le'arboim. Hit the guy a number of malchus which totals and finishes off, completes the number 40. What does it mean that the number 39 completes the number 40? That the number 39 amounts to or totals the number 40? I mean, even just to get the words out, it's very, very strange. What does that mean? You know, I mean, you want to tell me, you know, give him a number of malchus that is approximately 40. So even that, I'll be honest, I don't understand. Right? If you want to tell, if the Torah wants to say, give him 39 malchus, so just say, give him 39 malchus. What are we playing around? You know, give him 40, but don't really give him 40. And in what way is 39 really 40? 39 is a number that rounds off, or, you know, is the hashlama, is the completion of 40. So the Maral starts talking about this Rashi and gives us some insight into the significance of 40 and then the significance of 39. The Im Tomar asked the Maral, Lama Kosav Arbaim Velo Kosav Shloshim Votesha Yakenu. Very simple, basic question. If you want to say 39, just say 39. Don't make me crazy. It's 40, but it's not 40. Just say 39. The truth is, even the terminology of Chazal, Arboim Choser Achas. You give him 40 minus 1. What, we're in second grade? You know, 40 minus 1, you know, we have to do the arithmetic, you know, get out the abacus, move it around. Just say 39. What, 40 minus 1? What? Okay, Rachinami, but that doesn't make the kasha better, that makes the kasha stronger. So why do you say it by Shabbos? Right? You know, if you want to say 39, just say 39. What's Arboim Choser Achas? So that's the Maral first as follows. V'yesh mefarshim, devadai dinhu shi'iloke arboim. Right? One interpretation, Rabbi Hartman in his notes points out that he's not aware of who this is, right? But the Maral often quotes mefarshim who are not extant to us. So one way of looking at it is that fundamentally speaking, the guy deserves 40 malchus. Why does he deserve davka 40 malchus? Because it makes sense that a person who sinned to Hashem should get 40 malchus. Because the 40 malchus correspond to the 40 days in which Chazal tell us the fetus is formed in utero. Right? So this is not the Maral's own idea. The Ramban, right, as Rabbi Hartman points out in his notes, The Ramban makes this point already here on the Pasuk. And Rabbi Hartman also quotes the Tanchuma Yashon, an old version of the Medrash Tanchuma, where the Tanchuma there writes, Lama Arboim, Ela Ha'odom Hazen Notzal Arboim, Yom Yiloke Arboim V'yetze Yidei Onsho. Right? Basically the same idea. This person, it took 40 days to form the embryonic version of this person. So if he sinned, it makes sense somehow, you know, to turn back the clock and give him 40 malchus, you know, corresponding to the 40 days in which this person was created. So it really makes sense to give the guy 40. Rak, mimneshu yisbarach eino meyer kol chamoso. However, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is merciful. He doesn't pour out all of his wrath in its entirety on this person. V'lochein lo yiloke arboim shleimos. So therefore, we knock off one. Right? So, how does this answer the original question? The original question is, why not just write 39? So says the Maral, quoting this interpretation, because it's not really 39. It's really 40, but we'll give you a break. 39 has no significance. 39 doesn't correspond to anything. Really, it's 40, right? Because the guy deserves to be given 40 malchus. But you have to understand, you know, you're getting a break, you know, and, you know, after the discount, it goes down to 39. But the etzem, fundamentally, you know, it's 40. V'hayu karin gam kein v'hu rachum im ha-malchus, sheyesh bo yud gimel tevos neged ha-malchus, shehu yud gimel lefano v'shnei pa'am yud gimel la'acharov, ubo ksiv v'lo yor kol chamoso. And says the Maral, this idea that somehow it's really supposed to be 40, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his rachamim, in his mercy, is knocking it down, reflects itself in halacha. The Gemara tells us, Masech de Makos, that when they would hit the person in Beis Din, so they would recite the pasuk, V'hu rachum yechaper avon v'lo yashchis. So, you know, first of all, that points out the Maral, there are 13 words in that pasuk, and we've seen already how, you know, the malchus are administered in sections of 13 in front, and then two sets of 13 in the back. But more than that, that very pasuk, V'hu rachum, as we're going to say in a few minutes in Ma'ariv, contains the phrase, you know, V'hir bo lahoshiv apo v'lo yo'ir kol chamosa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not pour out his wrath in its entirety. So that pasuk, says the Maral, is incredibly relevant to the administering of malchus, because the very fact that we knock down the malchus from 40 to 39 is an expression of the lo yo'ir kol chamosa. It's an expression of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't punish us, you know, to the fullest extent. We really deserve more than, you know, the person deserves more than what he's getting right here. So that's one interpretation as to why 39 as opposed to 40, but at the same time why the pasuk needs to say arba'im as opposed to teisha ushloshim. A second interpretation. V'yesh mefarshim ki ha-malkus hu min hadin bevadai arba'im k'neged yetziras havlad. A second interpretation, which is quoting from the Rosh, again, as the Ramban said, as the Medrash said, the 40 malchus correspond to the 40 days of the creation of the fetus. V'lo nilka mem, however, the 40 malchus are not administered in their entirety. We knock it down one to 39. So it's a very technical thing, says the Rosh. Right, we already learned how the malchus is supposed to be divided up into three, right? One set in front, two sets in back. Umachus arboim yefshar l'chalko, right? And you can't divide 40 by three evenly. Right? Where you're going to hit the guy with a third of a malchus, right? So you know you have to have a number that's divisible by three. V'lachach lo yilake rak lamites u'mikomokom achiv u'mem. So in other words, that explains why the Torah uses the word 40 when in fact we give him 39. We need to do two things simultaneously, which are not really going to work together. We have to give him 40, but we also have to give him a number which is divisible by 3 so as to maintain this, you know, three-part administration of the malchus. So the only way to do that is to knock it down from 40 to 39. So in other words, essentially we're telling the guy, look, you got lucky. Why'd you get lucky? Because 40 isn't divisible by 3. Had 40 been divisible by 3, we would have given you the 40. Right? But, you know, you're a mazel, it's not divisible by 3, so we're knocking it down to 39. So by the way, this reinforces the idea we had in the previous Maral, namely that there is some inherent significance to dividing the Malkus into three portions of 13, because if there was no inherent significance to dividing the Malkus into three portions, why would I change what it says in the simple pshat in the Chumash in order to make the number of Malkus divisible by 3? So don't make it divisible by 3, right? You know, make, like we said before, make it divisible by 4. Give him 40 Malkus like it says, and give 10 in the front and 30 in the back, right? Why this insistence on, you know, one set in the front and then two corresponding sets in the back? So again, the Maral told us before that there's a hashkafa behind it, you know, that the baser part of the person deserves twice as much punishment as the more dignified part of the person, which is in the front. If not for some kind of spara like that, so like, why do we feel so compelled, you know, to divide up the number of Malkus by 3? In fact, writes the Maral, Ulfikach, Rabbi Yehuda Sfirilei, Beperek Eluay Alokin, the Makinoso, Mem Makos, Hoya Miyachin Mako Miyucho, the Makos Arboim Ben Ksefov, well, the Rabbonim of Sfirilehu Hachi. There is a Shita in Makos of Rabbi Yehuda who says, what do you mean? 39. It says 40. If it says 40, it means 40. Right? So the Gemara has to figure out, okay, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, how do you administer the 40? I mean, we can't. It still has to be divisible by 3. So the Gemara says, okay, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's an extra makkah that's administered between his shoulders. Right? Because you have to come up, we can't break up the notion of dividing the malchus by you know, making them divisible by 3. So even Rabbi Yehuda has to introduce an extra makkah over here, and the Rabbanim say, no, what are you introducing an extra makkah? Divisible by 3 means divisible by 3 without, you know, sticking in an extra one. Yeah, baker's dozen, you know, for the malchus. No, you know, just give him the you know, the malchus is divisible by 3 and leave it at that. So that's the Rush's explanation. Again, the second of the two, the second so far of the explanations as to why it says 40 when it really means 39. After Meiriv, we'll pick up as the Fashem with the Maral's own explanation as to why it says 40 when it really means 39, and we'll see that will go back to help us understand the strange Lashon in Rashi that 39 is Sochem Umashlim Esarboim, that somehow the number 39 is a completion of the number of 40 in some way or another. The Maral will help us understand what exactly that Lashon is talking about. Hey, welcome to the second half of the Shiur Maral Guraya Parshas Kiseitzei. So the Maral had raised the question, you know, Rashi tells us based on the Gemara in Makos that when the Torah says Arboim Yakenu, that the person who's subject to the penalty of Malkos, of lashes, gets 40 lashes, it doesn't really mean 40, it really means 39. So ask the Maral, alright, so if you mean 39, just say 39. You know, what are you making everybody crazy by saying 40? So already the Maral brought two interpretations as to why it's, fundamentally speaking, it's really 40, but either the Torah knocks it down to 39 because of God's Rachmanus, or the Torah knocks it down to 39 for logistic reasons. In other words, it has to administer the Malkos in a multiple of 3. So the only way to do that is to knock it down to 39, you know, to give 3 times 13. But on a fundamental level, if we could divide 3 evenly by, if we could divide 40 evenly by 3, we would have given, you know, 40 Malkos. That's the first two interpretations. Then the Maral adds his own interpretation as follows. Omnom nire, ki bevadai hoyo roilu kos arboim keneged arboim yom shal yusiris havlad. Yeah, as we said before, fundamentally speaking, the person should have gotten 40 Malkus to correspond to the 40 days in which the embryo is created. Uviyom ha'acharon hu yom arboim mikabel havlad neshama. How do these 40 days work when the fetus is being formed? So the Maral writes that the first 39 days are the creation of the body, Again, the body is not fully formed at the end of 39 days, but whatever parts that are eventually going to become the body are developed over those first 39 days. And on the 40th day, the neshama comes in to this fetus. It gets the neshama after 40 days, on the 40th day. But the first 39 days are the creation of the body. Now what part sinned when it, let's say, ate this chalev, this forbidden fat? It's the body. The Yetzirah is found in the body. Now, in a certain sense, the body is responsible, but the neshama is also held responsible as an accomplice. You know, if the neshama is going to be part of the body, so the neshama has to take its lumps together with the body. It's the body that sinned, but the neshama, so to speak, was driving the getaway car. You know, the neshama was an accomplice, you know, to what the guf, to what the body was doing. Well, lefikach amra Torah arboim yakenu sha'af haneshama shema guf chayiv malkus. So now says the Maral, let's understand the 40-39. The Torah says the person has to get 40 malchus. Why? Because 39 malchus are meant to punish the body, and one malchus is to punish the soul, because the soul needs to be punished together with the body. It also sinned together with the body.
But how does the soul get punished?
Again, it represents, you know, the punishment of the soul. I mean, the soul, I guess, doesn't feel it, but, you know, it corresponds, you know, to the notion of the soul being punished. Right, I guess so, okay. Ochein kishemakin oso lamentes malchus uvozeh shav yitziris haguf noki minachet shekein omru chachomim kochai v'malchus niftru midei onshan o yidei malchus. But what happens in reality? You strike the guy 39 times, and we know, says the Maral, that when the person receives the number of malchus that he's supposed to get, it totally purifies him and, you know, removes any degree of punishment from him whatsoever. What's the proof to that? The Mishnah says in Malchus that if a person was chayiv karis, he did a sin which brings upon him a punishment of karis, but he then gets malchus for having performed that sin, so after the malchus, the karis disappears, right? Because the malchus is not only a punishment, it's a purification. It wipes the slate clean. So after 39 malchus, the guf, the body, has already been purified. Oh, umimela nimsa haneshama tahara. So once the body has been purified from, you know, whatever impurity it might have, so the neshama is purified in the process. Why? She'ein bo pchisus me'atzma. Because fundamentally speaking, the neshama is pure. The neshama inherently didn't do anything wrong. It's only because of the fact that the neshama, so to speak, is in the wrong place at the wrong time. The neshama is together with this sinful body, so God not only has to punish the body, but he has to punish the neshama. But once you clear out the sin from the body, so now there's nothing left to purify the neshama. In other words, the neshama, in a sense, I think this is what he's saying. The neshama in this regard is a reflection of the body. So when the body sins, the reflection of the sinful body projects itself upon the soul, and the soul becomes tarred as well. But the minute that you purify the body, so now the reflection of the pure body reflects upon the soul, and the soul is purified. The soul doesn't need direct purification. The soul is purified by virtue of the body being purified. So to Shelley's point from before, how does whipping the person purify the neshama? I mean, the neshama doesn't feel it. It could be that the Maral would say, you're right. In other words, the neshama, the need to administer that extra lash is more symbolic than anything else. And indeed, the neshama's purity or lack thereof is totally just a reflection of the status of the body. So once you've purified the body, it's as if that neshama has received that last lash because it's been purified in the process. Kasher aguf naki min achet, ein kan p'chisus v'chet b'neshamas. And as once you purify the body, the neshama has no sin attached itself to it. Ein tzarach lahalkoso od, and from this point on, there's no need to administer that last lash. So again, let's just sum up, then we'll talk about some of the questions. Right? So, you know, the Maral is faced with the question, is it 39, is it 40? Right? So his answer is basically, it's both. Fundamentally, it's 40, because it's 39 for the sins of the body, and one for to punish the neshama. However, in practice, you know, once you've already administered the 39 to the body, the neshama is purified mimela. The neshama is purified as a result of the purification of the body, and therefore, you know, it's as if the 40 lashes have been received. The effect of 40 lashes is achieved by giving 39 lashes. Yeah. It doesn't fit in with Rabbi Yehuda, but he's explaining the position of Rabbanan that you give 39. I guess so. In other words, you know, since he can only get, you know, he's physically only capable of getting 18, so the 18 accomplishes what the 39 would have accomplished in a different context. Right. That's a good question. So the Maral is saying, really, there's no independent need to purify the neshama. Once you've purified the body, the neshama becomes tahar mimela. Right. So then Yaakov's question is, so then what's the whole point of Gehenna? In other words, once the body is purified by death, right? So shouldn't that automatically purify the neshama? So everybody's neshama after the person dies should automatically be tahor. And you know, clearly that's not the case. I mean, clearly we do believe that there's different levels of what happens to the neshama afterwards. So it could be that there's a difference between kapara for an individual chet versus kapara in a general sense for what the person has accumulated over a lifetime. In other words, kol chayve kriso shenilaku niftar mikrisoson. Right, a person is chayv karis for a particular sin. He gets malchus, right? So he's absolved of that particular karis. But if he was chayv karis multiple times and he only got one set of malchus, it would only address that particular sin which he was chayiv for. In other words, it wouldn't purify the person in its entirety. So, you know, this notion that the neshama is going to be purified by virtue of the kapara of the guf, maybe that only applies to a very specific sin. But, you know, when we talk about the person having accumulated a lifetime of sins, and then, you know, there's a kapara to some extent, you know, through the decay of the body, but that's only to some extent. You know, it's not quite the same as a laser-focused kapara, you know, that addresses itself to a particular avera. You know, so maybe that's the difference, you know, between those two different things.
Why are we forgetting about, you know, the fact that Kai was all lifetime? Let's say it was 80 years. He's had at least 75 good kippers.
He had Yom Kippur, but who said he did tshuva? In Yom Kippur is mechaper im hatshuva, right? In other words, there is a degree to which Yom Kippur is mechaper on its own, but overwhelmingly Yom Kippur works together with tshuva. So you know the guy woke up every Yom Kippur morning and said, you know, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shelo Asani Tzadik, right? That's his bracha in the morning, you know. So that's not gonna work very well, you know. I mean, he can have all the Yom Kippurs, the 75 Yom Kippurs, but still, without the tshuva, I'm not gonna say the Yom Kippur doesn't do anything, but it certainly doesn't accomplish, you know, full fledged kapara, you know, for the averus that the person has done. Okay, so a very interesting idea. Again, the Maral is saying that the 39 is able to accomplish what you would think from the get-go you need 40 to be able to accomplish. This, I think, although the Maharal doesn't say it in so many words, helps explain the strange Lashon and Rashi that we saw at the outset, which, again, it seems very hard to understand. 39, you're supposed to give him 39, so Rashi says, why 39? B'mispar arba'im, something which is the number of 40, v'lo arba'im shleimim, not exactly 40, not 40 full lashes, elominyon shehu sochem umashlim le'arba'im, but give him a number which will total and round off and complete the 40 lashes. On the surface, that's unintelligible. What do you mean? 39 doesn't fill out 40. 39 falls one short of 40. But according to the Maharal's explanation, it not only is a very interesting explanation in its own right, but it really helps explain the Lashon and Rashi. By giving him 39, because of this unique setup of the Maharal, that 39 accomplishes what 40 really was meant to accomplish, in this particular case, usually 39 is not the same as 40, but in this particular case, 39 is mashlim le'arba'im. 39 malchus in this particular case is able to complete that which you would normally need 40 to be able to complete. It is sochem. It gives the same accounting and bottom line as the 40, because with the 39 you're able to achieve kapara for both the guf and the neshama, you know, that which you would have thought theoretically you would need 40 to be able to accomplish. So not only is it a very interesting explanation in its own right, it also helps very much in understanding what otherwise I think is a very, very difficult lesson in Rashi to be able to understand.